Car Focus with Owen Beatty.
Well, joining me on the line now as our first guest on the programme today is Tony Owens from the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Association, Felacon, who says men should confide in other people about miscarriage and stillbirth and that it is okay to cry. Tony, thanks for joining us on the programme and very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Owen. Very happy to be here.
Tell us, first of all, before we talk a little bit about your story and, I suppose, the point of view that you're coming from here, Felacon, who you are as an association and a charity and the work that you do with people on the ground.
So Felacon were a group of parents that came together in 2008 because there was no services here in Ireland for them when they lost a baby anytime around birth or through miscarriage, and they formed in 2009, and foolishly they thought they could do it for a couple of years and then there'd be no need for them anymore. But it's just become so big because they're making awareness for people to know that it's okay to talk about your babies, it's okay to miss them, it's okay to grieve them, it's okay to do all these things. So Felacon has provided memory boxes in every maternity hospital in Ireland. It puts cuddle cots in all the hospitals. A cuddle cot is like a cooling system that you can have your baby in the room with you for longer, and then there's portable ones that you can bring your baby home for a few days if you wish. And they provide hands and prints casts so you can get them done in the hospital. They provide candles, they provide counselling services, they provide all sorts of things throughout the year, all around the country.
Because it is a very sensitive issue, it's a very personal thing to happen to parents out there if you go through, you know, 9 months, possibly even less, of a pregnancy, and it's all building up to having your baby and bringing the baby into this world, and then for, I would imagine, your world to just crash around you. You don't know where to turn and what supports are actually available, and that's where Felacon step in.
Yeah, that's where they step in. Like, you know, as you said, when you get pregnant, you start thinking of these plans already, like the baby's going to be due in June, we're going to have a summer baby, we'll have this time thing, or the baby's going to be due in December, we'll have a lovely Christmas baby. So all of us, already our plans have started for that baby and for that life. And when your world comes crashing down, when you hear that, like, there's no heartbeat or whatever the circumstances is, it's just devastating. And I know when we happened it, and when it happened to us, I should say, we were just in shock. And if it wasn't for Felacon and parents before us being able to provide us and help us to do, like, take pictures of our son, like, you know, it's better to have a million photographs that you never look at, that one photograph that you crave for. So, you know, simple things like taking pictures, taking the prints, you know, having the stuff in the hospital to have a read over to see where your rights are, all this kind of stuff. It's just so important.
Well, take us through, Tony, if you wouldn't mind, your story and your wife's story when you got pregnant and then what happened ultimately.
So we were trying for a while to get pregnant, and again, nobody knows anybody else's personal circumstances, so it's not like we shouldn't throw these catchphrases out with people like, oh, you're still young, or you can have another one, or that you're lucky you have one at home already. Like, that doesn't help. No child can ever replace another child. But in our circumstances was, we had a miscarriage early through Claire's pregnancy, and then we got pregnant again, and our child went full term. So we went 40 weeks and 2 days, and we went into Hollis Street, the happiest people in the world, only for 40 minutes later for them to tell us that there was no heartbeat. And, like, your world just falls apart. I remember thinking, like, this is a horror film. I'm floating above myself, looking down, saying, that's not me, that's not Claire. This isn't happening. So we were just in shock for all the way through that until Claire gave birth, and it was just. And I can talk about it now, but I tell you, when that happened, I fell apart. Couldn't do anything. It was so traumatic, and you can fall back into that, even though it's 10 years down the road now, and Arthur would be 10. You can fall back into that and, you know, still go back into that grief. You know, you're never going to forget them, nor would I ever want to forget them.
You mentioned a couple of things there that are very important, and often when we know somebody who had a miscarriage or a stillbirth, they don't know what to say. And we can get a little bit uncomfortable when it comes to those things. And people who are thinking they're saying the right thing end up putting their foot in it. Like when you think of, you're still young, you can try again. Not knowing that you've already had or you've been through a miscarriage previously. So this was the second time now that you had been down that route. And the point that I'm getting at is there anything that people can do when you're gone through that? Or do you just have to take a moment yourselves as a couple and as individuals to step back and grieve in your own way?
Well, we sort of were able to take it from the point of view of if we didn't have this experience and we were saying it to someone else, we might say the wrong thing. So we had to take with a pinch of salt when someone might say the wrong thing. Like, it's not just straightforward that you get through this 12-week scan or 20-week scan and then everything's hunky-dory. Until that baby's in your arms crying, you know, they're not fully there and everything's not completely done. So, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of saying, I'm really, really sorry that this has happened, and is there anything I can do for you? Rather than, you know, the catchphrases that we think helps but doesn't really help. You know, it's just against the natural order so much. You know, we should be able to grow up, and a parent should be able to grow old, and they pass away and we're old enough to deal with it. And then our kids grow up and they can deal with it when we pass away. But it's when your child passes away and you don't have those memories or those lifetimes, and people aren't able to tell you stories about them, and, you know, remember being with them. It's just heartbreaking, and it's just so wrong.
Do you think as a man sometimes, and this is kind of going back to the reason that we have you on the programme today, is that men, you're encouraging them to confide in other people about miscarriage and stillbirth and not be ashamed or worried about talking about it, and it is okay to get upset and to cry, because, and understandably so, a lot of the focus will be on the woman and making sure that she's okay and the health services that are in place for her. And my heart goes out to any woman who has been through such a traumatic experience. But on the other hand, as a man and as a husband, you feel as though you have to be there supporting your wife, your partner or your girlfriend. Do you sometimes forget about yourself and forget about grieving yourself?
Yeah, 100%. Like, the mothers are the most important people. There's no doubt about it. They're going through something so physically and emotionally and spiritually, so it is so hard for them. But it is important for people to say, okay, we'll ask, how's Claire? How's she doing? And then just take a second and say, how are you doing? Are you okay? You know, and as a man, and at first I didn't like that question because I was opening myself up, but it was only later on through my grief journey that I realised I'm glad those people asked that question. It was important. It meant they cared about me as well as caring about Claire and caring about our family. So it is so important. But I'm saying now that we should talk about it, but I wasn't able to talk about it at the time. You know, through my grief. It's only, I thought, if I got Claire better, I'd be better. But, like, it doesn't work that way. It's you want your partner to get better, but you have to get better as well. And, you know, it can be a longer journey. You know, you're both on the same journey, but you're two different paths to get there. Like, the man might have to go back to work early to pay the bills and do all this kind of stuff, and while the woman's at home on maternity leave or stuff like that. So it's while she's at home in her grief, a man might have to focus and man up, to, as they say, and get on. I remember being in work and ready to punch people just for asking me to do a normal work-related thing. It's just that my grief was taken over. You know, and even though you're smiling or you're happy, you know, grief is so complicated. Everyone compares grief to sadness and anger. But you can actually be happy in grief for that split moment, and then you can sink back into it. It's just so complicated.
And I don't want you to answer this question in a personal sense, because I don't want to get into your personal situation, Tony, but generally it can then, after you go through the miscarriage or the stillbirth, and say maybe 6 months down the line where you're back at home and you're gone back to the, in quotes, normal, it can put a strain on relationships then, because you can start asking the questions, why did it happen? Whose fault was it? Was anybody at fault? Do I blame myself? Do I blame my partner? You know, so it can have then a long-lasting impact on relationships and on your own kind of sanity, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it causes a lot of strain on the relationship, and that goes for everybody's relationship, whether you have the best relationship in the world or whether you were struggling a little to begin with. But I'd like to think that, you know, it wasn't anybody's fault. It's just one of these things that can happen. And, you know, there's so many people that come to us and, you know, they'd be thinking, I was walking too much, or I wasn't walking enough, or I ate the wrong thing, or I did all this kind of stuff. But, you know, it's just so, unfortunately, it's so common for a miscarriage or a stillbirth. So, you know, let the hospital do their autopsy or wherever it is. And hopefully it's just, and it sounds a little, maybe sounds a little wrong to say, but hopefully it's just one of those things. And then if you are lucky enough to get pregnant again, as we did, that you can go on and have your second baby or your third baby or whatever way it is. But, yeah, you know, we've a baby in heaven and we've two kids at home, so we're the parents of three children. We'd never consider our other two children, Grace and Sam, know all about Arthur, and they'll always know that they have a big brother.
Well, that's the point that I was going to make, and I was going to ask how you and Claire kind of managed to cope. And I wouldn't use the term move on, because you never move on, and that baby Arthur will always be part of your lives. I'm going to give out a couple of phone numbers for Féile Conn, anybody who wants to grab a pen or a piece of paper to take down those numbers, because there will be a lot of people who are tuned in today that are affected or impacted by this discussion. So that was a number of years ago that happened, but you now have two other children, Tony, and how are they keeping and how are you keeping?
Grace and Sam are fine. They're growing up and being big and bold as kids do, but they're good, and Claire's good. It's, you know, as I said, we're the parents of three. Like, Arthur was our first child, and even though it was the horrible circumstances that it happened in, he was able to give us the precious gift of, he made me a dad and he made Claire a mom. You know, so nobody can ever take that away. And that goes for everybody out there. You know, it's a special thing. It's not what we wanted. We don't want to be holding our children in our hearts. We don't have to hold them in our arms. But it's the way it is. And Owen, if I could just say, like, with Féile Conn, and I know you're going to throw some numbers out there, the dads think, you know, I'm only going to the support meeting for my wife's sake or for my partner's sake. You know, there can be benefits to it, but what we found was dads don't like being in a meeting room and sitting and talking about their feelings. The mothers will, and more power to them. They're the better of the two sexes, to be honest. And, but what we found with Féile Conn was, and what we did was, we set up a football team, and the dads come down and play once a month, and we play charity matches and stuff like that. And they're coming into a safe environment where everybody's in the same boat, where everybody gets to play in memory of their own little baby or babies. And that was, we found that much more beneficial to the, for the dads.
Super stuff. It's a great idea, and I think fair play to you for coming on and speaking out like that and so openly, Tony. Really appreciate it. That is Tony Owens from the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Association, Felacon, sharing his story. A couple of phone numbers then to give out to you. A landline for Felacon if you want to contact them. 028 51 301. That's 028 51 301, and if you don't get through on the landline, you can also contact them on mobile number, which is 085 249 6464. So that's 085 249 6464, or you can also get them on their website, and the spelling of Felacon is F-E-I-L-E-A-C-A-I-N, F-E-I-L-E-A-C-A-I-N. Tony Owens, thanks so much for joining us on the programme this afternoon. Best wishes to you and to Claire and all the children as well at home, and of course keeping in memory little baby Arthur as well. Take care, and thanks for that. Now, some breaking news that is just coming to us on the programme this afternoon. Joseph Pushka has been found guilty of the murder of school teacher Aisling Murphy. So the 33-year-old Slovakian national now faces a life sentence for murdering Miss Murphy at the Grand Canal in Tullamore in County Offaly on the afternoon of January 12th, 2022. The jury at the Central Criminal Court returned the verdict after listening to over 5 weeks of evidence. During the trial, the jury heard evidence that Mr. Pushka stabbed Miss Murphy on the right side of the neck 11 times with a knife. The stab wounds damaged her right and left jugular vein, and indeed a fingerprint mark and a DNA sample belonging to Pushka was taken from a bicycle found near Aisling Murphy's body. Male DNA found under Aisling's fingernails also matched two samples taken from Joseph Pushka, and the trial heard that on the 14th of January, 2 days after her death, Pushka admitted killing Aisling from his bed in St. James's Hospital in Dublin. He told detectives, in quotes, "I did it, I murdered, I am the murderer." But that is news just breaking there in the last literally 3 minutes. Joseph Pushka has been found guilty of the murder of schoolteacher Aisling Murphy. Now then, what about teaching your children patience and not giving in to them straight away? Well, joining me on the line is Joanna Fortune, child psychotherapist. Joanna, good afternoon, and good to talk to you on the programme again. Go here on Kildare Focus. Yeah. This is a tricky one, really, because it can be so hard to try and teach the children patience, not give in to them. Maybe for our own peace of mind, it's easier just to be like, okay, whatever you want, you can have it. But patience is key, isn't it?
It is, and there's a couple of ways of looking at this. First of all, we start with ourselves, as we do with so many things. I mean, it's not easy to be patient when you're a grown-up, never mind a child. And we have to apply something of a developmental lens to this. Very young children, and again, I'm going to say chronological age, but anyone listening, you know the developmental age of your own child, and you know if they're able for this or not, whether they're 4, 5, or 6. But any child under the age of 4 is really not capable of what we would identify as patience. So they really have a poor sense of impulse control. They have very little delayed gratification capacity. And when they want stuff, they want it now. And when we say no, they hear it really as an invitation for negotiations to begin. They don't hear that as, oh, look at you bringing me a boundary. I love that. It's just not the way it works. So I think some of this can also come down to managing our expectations of what it is we should be expecting of very young children. Apart from that, in our constantly turned on, switched on, fast-paced lives, where we're in receipt of endless streams of information, the capacity for delayed gratification is quite fragile in many of us, never mind just children. So actually, there is benefits for all of us slowing down and embracing that piece of waiting, but it doesn't come easy, and especially not for children. That's said, like you said in your introduction there, it is important, and there are ways to explore that with our children.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point that you made there in relation to instant gratification. I want it now and all of that. And that's not to blame the children, but we live in a world where, you know, social media is so easily accessible. If you want to watch a video on YouTube, so easily accessible that there's no need for patience. And there might be some people listening who remember winding back the videos and that kind of thing. You know, if you wanted to watch something, you had to actually work for it. But nowadays, it's just on demand. You say that there are ways, though, to teach patience to our children. How can we do that?
I like to come at it in quite a playful way. I think there are lots of ways you can playfully approach impulse control and delayed gratification. For example, playing games that involve red light, green light, you know, a go stop piece of the game. So you come from one side of the room over towards me, just taking teeny little baby steps on your tippy toes when I say green light, but you must freeze when I say red light. So you have to take your cue from the adult in charge, and you have to wait, go. Musical statues, keep it simple. That's also a great game for impulse control, because you have to be able to freeze and hold and wait till the music starts before you move again. Mother, may I? You know that game where you say, do a jumping jack, and the child has to say, may I? You say yes or no, and they have to then respond accordingly. Another one I like to do that you could actually make a little practice at home, and again, Owen, this applies for grown-ups just as much as children, is take an ice cube tray, put a small little piece of something like Lego into it, fill it with water, make ice, and give your child two of those ice cubes, simply because it's better to have two hands occupied at the same time. And they have to wait. They have to hold that ice. It's a sensory experience of the ice cold in their skin. They have to wait for the ice to melt. You can have them submerge their hands in a bowl of warm, not hot now, but warm water, so that they have the ice cold on their skin, the skin in the warm water, the patience building of waiting to get the reward. And then every day, if you do that, they take each piece of Lego and they attach it together. And over the course of the week or whatever it is, they can build a structure. So it's also doing this kind of continuous play piece with them. Any kind of play like that is a really good way, and it's much more effective than, as the grown-up saying, I told you to wait. Why didn't you just wait? Are you listening to me? Because those words are not going to reach me as a child, but helping me to change from the inside out through play, that will help.
Yeah, and just while you're mentioning those, I'm thinking saving as well is another way that you can be taught about patience. I mean, we've only bought a new house and we were saving for the last 3 years. So that taught me patience anyway. It might not have been the best thing, but it did. But anyway, that is a way of teaching patience to children and, of course, adults.
It is, and especially when we're in this kind of gimme, pester, power dynamic with our children, where they're like, but I want it. You can say, you can have it when you have saved up for it. So let's look at things you can do to earn 50 cents, earn a euro, put it in your little money box and build that over time and buy the item you want for yourself. That's a really, it's healthy in lots of ways. By the way, it teaches good budgeting skills as well. But absolutely, that's a good one for delayed gratification. But another thing that comes up when we think about patience and building capacity for patience is that, and again, as society, not just with children, we've really lost the value of being bored and embracing boredom as free-floating state of mind wandering, you know, a little bit of daydreaming and just letting your mind wander. Anyone who travels by public transport, instead of taking out your phone, just looking out the window, staying in the moment, seeing if you make eye contact with somebody on the bus or train with you and strike up a casual conversation. There are lots of opportunities for moments of meeting that emerge out of boredom. But for children, boredom is also a great way to access desire, to work out what I like, what I don't like, what I want to do, what sparks joy for me, what doesn't. But because they're constantly bombarded with thing after thing after thing after thing, no one has to wait a week for what happens next in their TV series, because you can stream it on demand, as you said. So embracing a little bit of boredom is also a really good investment in the value of patience.
Yeah, and finally then, Joanna, I mean, patience for the parents as well, because in order for your child to be taught patience, you have to be patient with how you're teaching them patience, if that makes sense. Because if they start saying, I want it now, I want it now, and then you give in to that, well, you haven't been very patient either.
No, and you've taught them a really important lesson. You've taught them that pestering you is a very effective form of communication, and they will keep doing that. So it is about kind of almost, it's very hard, anyone who's had a child go on and on and on. It is very hard to withstand that. And a big part of you goes, they'll just say yes and make this stop. But actually, you have to hold the boundary, because boundaries keep us all safe. Nobody ever says thanks so much for them, but they do keep us safe and they teach important lessons. So it is about topping up, let's call it our tolerance cup, you know, making sure that I'm in a place of understanding how hard it is not to get what you want. I can understand and empathize with that, but I can also hold the boundary and say, here's what we're going to do. And I've given you an answer. I know you don't like it, but it is my answer. Let's go do something else now instead, and move me towards distraction and redirection, because otherwise you're going to get locked into a power struggle conversation about something you're not willing to move on.
Well, there we go. Some great tips on how to teach your child patience and the importance of it. Joanna Fortune, child psychotherapist, thanks as always for your time, and enjoy the rest of your Thursday. And thanks for joining us on Kildare Focus. Just going back to our previous chat with Tony Owens from the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Association, Féile Conn. I got a message in that says, great interview with Tony Owen. Completely understand his situation. I was there 34 years ago, but it always stays with you. Something like that shapes your life forever. Very well articulated from Tony. Well, thanks for that message, and hope you're doing well as well, because I know even though it's 34 years, it still feels like yesterday for a lot of people. So indeed, hope you're doing well. After the break, we have another piece of music from an Irish singer-songwriter, and then we'll be telling you about Sportsability Day taking place in Maynooth this weekend.
Kildare Focus with Owen Beattie.
Now, Kildare Sports Partnership and Maynooth University have announced that the Kildare Sportsability Day will take place this coming Saturday, November the 11th, from 12 until 2 o'clock in the Phoenix Sports Centre in Maynooth University. And Fiac Andrews, Sports Inclusion Disability Officer with Kildare Sports Partnership, is with me on the line. Fiac, good to talk to you again. And it feels like only a couple of weeks ago we were talking about Sportsability Day 2022. And it's rolled around now this year again, so lots to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely, Owen. Thanks for having me on. Hard to believe that it's been a year already, as you said there. But no, we're very much looking forward to Sportsability Day this weekend, which we're delivering, as you said, in partnership with Maynooth University. It's an event to exhibit the various sporting and physical activity opportunities for people of all abilities across County Kildare. So it's something we're really excited about.
Absolutely. There's over 20 local Kildare clubs and national sporting bodies from 15 sports that will be there showcasing their activities.
Yeah, that's correct. So we have a mixture of both indoor and outdoor activities. So some of the indoor activities include visually impaired tennis and enjoy tennis, wheelchair rugby, inclusive basketball, badminton, dance and fencing. And then some of the outdoor activities include GAA, rugby, soccer and cricket. And there's much more as well across a variety of information stands, demonstrations and come and try sessions.
So it's accessible for people of all abilities, but really, who are you targeting here? Is it children, teenagers, older people, or a mix of everybody?
It's a mix of everybody. It's an event to cater for people of all ages. So there will be some programs that would be specifically aimed at children, and then there's other programs which would be more predominantly aimed at adults, where some of the local clubs and groups would be recruiting members.
Okay, I see that there will be accessible changing and bathroom facilities as well. First aid from Civil Defence. There'll be food and drink available there as well. And admission is free. And the event is suitable for people with a disability, parents, teachers, students, and anyone with an interest for sports for all abilities. I mean, we've spoken here on the Kildare Focus on the Kildare Today programmes with a number of sporting organisations that have set up GAA play for all or soccer for all or rugby for all. And it's for those people who may have a disability or they may have lost a leg or lost an arm, who thought that they would never be able to play sport or never be able to return to sport if they played it previously. But there is just so many opportunities out there for those people.
Yeah, that's right. There's a huge amount of opportunity across the county in terms of sporting activities and physical activity for people with intellectual, physical or sensory disabilities. And the number of clubs providing inclusive sessions just continues to grow year round. So it's a fantastic opportunity on Saturday for some of those clubs to showcase exactly the activities that they are delivering to members of the public.
Okay, and if anybody listening wants to go along then to Maynooth University on Saturday, it is free, admission's free, but registration is advised, is it?
Registration is advised via Kildare Sports Partnership social media. There's a link to a short Microsoft form there, but registration can also be done on the day at the event.
Okay, just give me the website again.
It's the Kildare Sports Partnership social media.
Kildare Sports Partnership social media. All right. Listen, we wish you the very best of luck at the weekend, and hopefully the weather stays good as well. But there are some indoor activities that are going to be taking place. Maynooth University between 12 and 2 o'clock this coming Saturday for the Sports Ability Day taking place. And that is Fiach Andrews, Sports Inclusion Disability Officer with the Kildare Sports Partnership.